This is Progressive Radio, a weekly conversation hosted by Matthew Rothschild, editor of The Progressive Magazine, a leading voice for peace and social justice. For more information about Progressive Radio or The Progressive Magazine, log on to our website at progressive.org.
I'm Matt Rothschild, and welcome to Progressive Radio. Today, it's a pleasure for me to have in the studio Sabrina Davin, the screenwriter of Monsoon Wedding. Sabrina Davin, welcome to Progressive Radio.
Thank you.
How'd you get interested in making films in the first place?
Well, there's a short answer and a long answer. The short answer is that I actually wasn't interested in films at all growing up. In being a filmmaker, I was interested in watching them. My parents are doctors, and it was expected that I would be in the sciences. And when I finished school, I knew that I didn't want to be a doctor, but I didn't know what I wanted to be. It was sometime when I was in college that I have no idea where it came from. Maybe it came from the fact that I come from a very large extended family, and, you know, I like stories, you know, from the desire to be a storyteller. So it started in college, and then I came to America to go to film school at Columbia University.
I read that you had a brief experience at med school. Is that like?
Yes, you know that. yes, I did for a month before I dropped out, and my family was very upset.
I bet, because they probably wanted you to follow in their footsteps.
Of course.
And it's interesting in Monsoon Wedding that there is a character, one of the sons, who wants to be a dancer.
Yes.
And the father there says, oh, come on, you're going to be an intelligent young professional.
Yes.
Was there a little autobiographical echo there?
Oh, my God. Through most of the movie, Monsoon Wedding is probably the most personal film I've ever written. It all came from life. The first draft that I wrote, I didn't even change names. And then I found out that we were going to shoot it, and then I had to quickly go and change people's names. So most of the film was very autobiographical. You know, but it's in India, it's, you know, the expectation for children was that they would be in the sciences, become the traditional choices would be an engineer or a doctor, you know, much like other Asians, like the Chinese. There's no real tradition of being in the arts. It's not considered stable. Or, you know, even, you know, sufficiently socially acceptable.
I'm speaking with the screenwriter Sabrina Davin. The movie Monsoon Wedding was such a great movie. And you say most of it was autobiographical, and that suggests to me that it may have been a little bit delicate when people in your family saw the movie, especially
yes.
The theme of sexual abuse.
Yes, it was. It was. I was very nervous before the movie screened. You know, there was the sexual abuse, and then there's a bride who has an affair.
The night before her wedding,
exactly. There were two things that I learned. First of all, you know, there was a time when I just had to tell myself that it was okay, and I was still nervous about it. And when the film screened in New Delhi, my parents invited everybody because they were so excited. So we had a screening for 308. It was going to be a close, small screening, 308 family and friends. And I watched the movie, and the response was wonderful. My parents didn't mention the sexual abuse. I don't think they could discuss that with me. But because the film did well, or maybe it was handled in a way that didn't feel untruthful, or it was delicately handled, they were okay with it. And the other thing I realized was that even though I used characteristics of family members, you know, in the movie, is that nobody thinks they're the bad guy. So that was fine. Everybody thought they were, you know, like the young, dashing cousin from Australia.
And how prevalent is the problem of sexual abuse that you depict there?
I don't know statistically, but just empirically, just from having, you know, being raised there, you hear stories about sexual abuse, not particular to India. It happens globally. It happens all around the world. There was almost no one I spoke to growing up who hadn't in some form experienced sexual abuse, and was usually by somebody they knew, as the case usually is. But in India, we never discuss it in the public domain. You know, there are no talk shows or movies of the week about sexual abuse. It was very important to me that I put it in, both politically but also dramatically. And it was also very important to me that the abuser be somebody who was respected in the family. You know, it would have been too easy to make it, say, the tent contractor, because he comes from a lower class, and that's easier and doesn't, you know, need to make you question your, you know, your family or your middle class morality.
In fact, this was the rich uncle benefactor, right?
Exactly, who, you know, the family looked up to, who was sort of the patriarch of the family, was a dignified man otherwise. So, yeah, I mean, you know, it is very prevalent. I just don't know how much, but it is, you hear about it all the time, except you never talk about it.
I heard this was the first time that it really had been depicted in India. Did that occasion a great deal of controversy?
Not so much, which was very surprising. The first time it screened in India was at Calcutta, the film festival, and I was really nervous. And And the movie finished, and the first bunch of people who came up to me were Bengali housewives and their husbands, who came up and said, thank you for doing that. That's exactly what happened. That's exactly how it happens. And that was just tremendous validation, because it's another thing for people who are politically conscious to respond that way, but for just ordinary housewives who would not discuss that. And then it treated other festivals. Multiple people have come up to me to tell me that, you know, they brought their mother to see that because it happened with them, and, you know, they were so thankful it was in the movie. Of course, every now and then I have met people who've said, you know, well, that is just obscene. It never happens in India. Mm. Or so even the suggestion that the young son is homosexual, you know, was hard for some Indians, but really very, very few.
In the sense that you're casting shame on the country or something like that?
Well, more, you know, it wasn't so much casting shame on the country, but just that it doesn't happen.
Just strict denial.
Yeah.
And the fact that there is so much denial raised a question in my mind, because I just assume there's denial, because there's denial here. We ran an article in The Progressive a long time ago by Bonnie Erfer, who wrote about her own personal experiences, and we called it Diary of a Normal Childhood, or she called it Diary of a Normal Childhood. And the question in the film, the choice that you had to make as the screenwriter is whether to... have this end in tragedy, or have there be a rescue, if you will.
Yeah.
And how'd you resolve that one?
That was the hardest part about the script. The ending for the sexual abuse story was just about the hardest thing to write. And I knew two things starting off. One was that I wanted it to end well, because it would have just been too hopeless if it ended tragically and the family just said, well, let's just forget about it and pretend it never happened.
Because that must be a reaction that many families have.
That's the more truthful reaction, honestly. But I wanted to show that there was a way to respond. Now, again, you know, in India, unlike, say, in the West, you wouldn't take the family member to court. You know, you wouldn't really want to have this become like a public spectacle. So it was important to find a way in which the family can deal with it. Also, as a way of showing there is a way to deal with it without breaking bounds of dignity. So it happens, you know, when the father finally confronts his brother-in-law. It happens when the family is together just before the wedding. The first draft, it actually happened with the whole wedding party. And then I changed that because that just felt like it wouldn't really, you know, you wouldn't do that. But this was something you could do.
In a way, there are two or maybe even three heroes in that big aspect of the play. There's, first of all, the very young girl who says, what's the big deal about kissing?
Yeah.
You know, my uncle's already showed me how to kiss.
Yeah.
And then at that very instant, the cousin who was also abused by the same prestigious uncle chases down the uncle when he starts driving away with the new young cousin or niece. And she confronts him publicly, which is a great scene.
Yeah.
And then the father rises to the occasion in a way that we're not sure he's going to.
Yeah.
Because you have him talking with the elder niece and saying, you know, you can't do this. You know,
you gotta
come to the wedding. We can't make a big stink about this. The father here is shown in a very redemptive way, in a courageous way.
Right. The father becomes very heroic. And, you know, I wanted him to be not somebody who was sort of heroic from the beginning, because then it doesn't matter. He already has higher, you know, moral standing. But, you know, he's an ordinary father. You know, he's short with his wife. He's very short with his son. And he's conservative in that sense. But yet he manages to be that. So, you know, I think it makes identifying with the father much easier because of that. And he really becomes heroic. I mean, also his performance is so wonderful that...
Oh, he is a very real character, and my colleague at the Progressive, Amitabh Pal, tells me that he's one of the finest actors in all of India.
He's a legendary actor. He's just... When I was writing the script, I was still at school when I was writing it, and I, at that time, of course, I didn't know it would sell or be produced, and I would always imagine that he was the father. So
you said earlier on, Sabrina Davan, the screenwriter of Monsoon Wedding, that storytelling is always important to you.
Yeah.
How did that come about? Were there storytellers in your family, or were you drawn to reading and stories that way? Who had the most influence in getting you interested in storytelling?
Some of it certainly comes from family. Some of it just comes from the culture. You know, India, of course, has a great tradition of mythology and folk tales, and storytelling is really part of the tradition. When I was growing up, we didn't have TV channels. There was one TV channel which showed TV for maybe 2 hours a day. And out of that, most of it was usually agriculture programs, you know, and how to plant seeds, which was, of course, monumentally boring. So the only real form of entertainment was reading books, which my parents encouraged. And they also discouraged watching movies. They didn't think it was a good influence. So that's one, you know, that I was just, you know, and I'm an only child. So, you know, and as is with only children, you know, we're a little strange and we have imaginary friends and make up stories. So there was that. But I also have a very large extended family. I have about 42 first cousins. And all the material that I've ever used and everything that I've written so far really sort of derives from what I learned about, you know, being in this really tight community of people. And there are just so many stories to tell because, you know, there's the crazy uncle and the nice aunt and the crazy aunt and so and so.
And one of the other stories in Monsoon Wedding is the frame of the arranged marriage and whether this is going to go on and whether the woman, the bride who's having the affair, whether she's going to, first of all, tell the groom-to-be what's going on, and she ultimately decides to, and he kind of astonishingly quickly gets over that and decides to go through with it. What statement were you trying to make, if any, about arranged marriages as an institution?
Well, it was important to me when I was writing that story that in the West, whenever I've met people, you know, and the two things people associate with India is the caste system and arranged marriages. And arranged marriages are always thought to be a very sort of barbaric, provincial system of marriage, oppressive to women. Whereas there are cases, without doubt, where that is true. But in the modern arranged marriage system, it's pretty civilized. I mean, you know, you get a chance to meet each other and then you get married. It's not that barbaric. And lo and behold, you could find somebody really wonderful. I mean, the equivalent of that in modern America now is, you know, dating systems and, you know, websites where you can matchmake and
Match.com.
Exactly. So it was important that, you know, she finds, you know, that it is possible that your parents can find you the perfect man. Because of course, I've had many cousins who had arranged marriages, and they're perfectly happy within them. So that part of it was important, that it isn't really always barbaric. Doesn't mean that that's, you know, that's what everybody should do, and that's, and it works for everyone, but there are people for whom it works.
What's it like to come here and have people be so ignorant is the cruel way of putting it, but have such a limited knowledge base, might be a nicer way of putting it, about the rest of the world or about your country, India?
Yeah. What is it like?
How difficult is that?
How difficult is that?
To start from zero or even to start from negative.
Well, you know, I meet a lot of people who have some knowledge of India. It's true, Americans tend to have less. You know, the British tend to have more, but that's because there was 300 years of British rule, so they're more connected to India. The one question, though, I do get tired of being asked is about caste. What caste are you? What caste are they?
Why does that trouble you?
Well, first of all, I think caste system, the importance of the caste system has decreased in India. My family doesn't believe in caste. My grandfather belonged to this progressive movement, where you know, they denounced their last name and they believed in female emancipation and women's education. So my family doesn't believe in caste. But in the West, we're still talking about like Indian traditions that are about 100 years old. So you get tired. Also, what is hard to explain is that there is no one truth about India. Urban India and rural India are centuries apart. So when you say, is the caste system prevalent and are people oppressed by caste? Yes and no. In rural India? Yes, certainly. In urban India? No, not so much. So it's hard to answer that. And also, the idea of like what caste somebody belongs to is not something you automatically think of as an Indian. But when you speak with Americans, they want to know what caste you're, if you're upper caste, lower caste, and that played a role in your life. I'm upper caste, but I'm not a Brahmin, but it played absolutely no role in my life. So that's one. The other is, you know, sometimes, and this really doesn't happen very frequently, but it has happened where people ask me how come I speak English, or if I learned English when I came here, and then, you know, then it's like, well, you know, the British were there for 300 years, we all speak English. It's not the link language of India.
I'm Matt Rothschild. You're listening to Progressive Radio. I'm having the pleasure of speaking with Sabrina Davin, the screenwriter of Monsoon Wedding. Let's talk a little bit about your next movie that I saw and that ran on PBS, correct?
Yes.
Called Cosmopolitan, which is an upbeat, romantic, sometimes zany little comedy. What brought you to it?
It actually came to me, the producers brought the movie to me. It was based on a short story also called Cosmopolitan, written by an Indian writer. I had finished writing Monsoon Wedding. The Monsoon Wedding hadn't come out then, and they called me and they gave me the short story. The short story is really wonderful. I mean, it's a different beast from the movie because it changes a lot in adaptation. The short story, the form it exists, is wonderful, and I read it.
Was the short story writer okay with the changes, or was that not something in the writer's purview?
It is such a symptom of how divorced you are from or how much you have to give up on your the authorship on your material. I have never met the writer and I have no idea what he thinks. Although I did hear from a common writer friend that he liked it very much. So,
you know, there's some common themes from Monsoon Wedding to this one. And some of those are, you know, domineering fathers and, and coming to grips with changing a little bit. And also there's the theme of beauty. This was more in this in Cosmopolitan than the other, though, what the norm of beauty is. And also the father at the end comes around as the father in Monsoon Wedding did.
Yeah.
And that's kind of interesting to me. Yeah. What about the story in particular appealed to you?
Well, that movie, when I got the movie, I'd already been in America for a few years. And I think the immigrant experience, you know, feeling, although, you know, this is, the character is a male and he's much older, but that same sort of feeling where you don't quite belong, you know, there's that scene in the movie where he speaks about, you know, where he doesn't really feel like he belongs in India anymore, but he never quite fits in America either. You don't eventually end up belonging to neither place. I think that feeling, that fish out of water feeling in the book, and, you know, and trying to adapt to American customs. I mean, you know, this, of course, it goes to an extreme. He starts relying on Cosmopolitan magazine on how to court a woman. I didn't have to do that to court a man, but I did similarly have to, you know, like I had to learn the art of small talk, which I was completely untutored in when I was in India.
There's no functional equivalent of small talk.
No, I mean, you have very intimate conversations with complete strangers. They'll ask if you're married and how much your father makes and, you know, what you do and why aren't you married. But you don't really have a tradition of small talk. When I came to New York, I used to be so intimidated standing at a grocery line because, you know, if somebody would say, oh, isn't that a nice day? Americans can find something witty and clever to say to that. And I would just be like, yes, it is nice.
And so people thought you were aloof or something.
Yes, or, you know, I just wasn't very bright.
Well, I doubt they thought that. We thought you were unfriendly, though, which isn't true either. The interesting thing to me about this little movie, Cosmopolitan, is it starts so fast.
Yeah.
I mean, he is married and he has a daughter, and within the first 2 minutes, they take off. First of all, he seems like, you know, he's careless, he's sensitive, he takes his shoes off and he jumps on the couch right next to his daughter and kind of squeezes her over to the side and he tells his wife to, you know, you missed a spot here where you should be dusting.
Right.
And then they both leave
for
what seemed to be, though it's a brief time, legitimate reasons.
Yes.
Why, as a screenwriter, would you do it so quickly?
Well, you know, that part of it actually doesn't belong in the short story. The short story starts months after the wife and daughter have already left. But in a film, it's how do you depict backstory? You know, if you start with him being very depressed, you don't understand where he's coming from. So the whole first act was created. You know, the daughter is going to Mongolia with a boyfriend. All of that was invented. So it was just sort of to establish where he was coming from. So then you would understand where he goes to. And also understand the journey he travels. And this traditional man who just can't believe that a wife or daughter would want to leave to be able to be in a relationship that didn't have to be as simple as all or nothing in the end.
One irony is the wife leaves to go to India to find some spiritual awakening and meaning. And actually, the husband finds some spiritual awakening and meaning and love, too.
Yeah.
But it's not the love that he expects.
Yeah, or that he thought he would, you know, have or felt entitled to.
And that's part of it, too, because one of the heroes of Cosmopolitan is the woman next door.
Right.
Who is an emancipated woman who keeps her married name, though she's no longer married. And he asks her finally, why do you keep, they were exchanging secrets.
Right.
It was though she had no secrets, but he catches her.
Yeah.
And says, you know, why do you keep referring to yourself as Mrs.? And she says, well, tell me what she says if you remember.
Well, I actually do not remember.
It's something
it has
like,
been 3 years since I wrote the movie.
I think it's something like, I keep that title because I don't want to be asked to be married again.
Oh, right.
I can't remember the exact words. Yeah. But that comes back
exactly
and haunts
because
him
that's
at the
why
end.
She doesn't like going back home as well because, you know, at home he feels an outsider in the world he lives in, but she feels an outsider in the world that she grew up in because there everyone's married with kids. So, you know, yeah, in that sense, they're both lost souls. And yes, she...
But he trips here because he falls in love with her and believes that she's in love with him and believes in And he believes that the only path to go is the marriage path.
Yeah.
Again, this question of marriage. And yet she seems to triumph there by saying, look, there's another way.
Yeah.
And was that all that in the short story as well?
That was in the short story, yeah. Those themes were, yeah.
And what about at the end when he talks to the daughter back in Mongolia?
That was made up. The daughter story was sort of really made up. The daughter story didn't really exist that much in the short story. Also sort of the ending, you know, the whole externalizing with the cricket bat, you know, and, you know, his love for cricket, which he had forgotten because he had an oppressive father. That was, you know, what I had to bring in to sort of be able to externalize it. Also, the idea of the cricket bat in the end. And then he plays baseball with the cricket bat, you know, so this East meets West and the two cultures can meet.
And it was a beautiful thing, though, because that was the secret that he shared with her.
Yes.
His desire suppressed to be a great cricket player. And then she has the cricket bat under the Christmas tree that he threw out in a fit of anger because she wanted to get married to him. And then he realizes that. Hey, maybe I'm being a little bit stubborn here. And he talks to his daughter finally in Mongolia, who's with a German boyfriend, and says...
With a nose ring.
And a nose ring. And basically he says, you know, go your own way.
Yeah.
Be happy in your own way, not my way, not anybody else's way.
Yeah.
So in a way, it's a truly liberating message of the movie. And is that important to you?
Yes, very important, very important. You know, again, it's such a strange thing. When you are writing a movie, the thing that you're thinking most about at that moment in time in your life becomes a part of your work. And at that time, I was thinking a lot about that, about sort of finding your own way, things not just being so simple. So yes, I mean, it's still important, but you know, that was something I was particularly interested in at the time as well.
You said that was 3 years ago. What are you working on now?
Right now, well, I've done something since Cosmopolitan, but right now I'm working on two films. I'm doing an animation film for Disney, which is a musical, and also a live action film for Disney.
What's it like doing animation?
Animation has been absolutely wonderful. It's great. It's liberating in the sense that you could do anything you want. Nothing is a production hassle because it can all be invented. It's also much more collaborative. I mean, film is essentially collaborative, but animation more so, especially in a musical, because I work with the composer and the animators are also creatively involved in the process. And you know, you have to think in a certain kind of way. Animation films need to have an animation hook, a good reason why they're in animation form versus live action. But then you can do anything you want, you know. You could have, you know, clouds. I mean, it's great because I can bring in so much from Indian mythology and folklore, you know, into that. In India, for instance, you know, the moon is a dominant character in children's stories. He's really a person. He's your mother's brother. He's your uncle, you know. So you can do stuff like that, which, of course, is, you know, with CGI, you could do it in live action. But generally speaking, it's hard.
And what is the name of that film and when's it going to be out?
So far, it's called The Untitled Indian Musical. So it only has a working title. Monsoon Wedding was a working title as well, actually. And then we just stuck with it. Well, but I don't imagine this will finally be called Untitled Work Indian Musical.
And an action film? I wanted to surmise that you'd be doing action film. What's that like?
That's about two teenagers, an Indian cousin and an American cousin of Indian heritage, who, you know, and sort of their journey of friendship.
And is it about their separate consciousnesses?
Yes, exactly.
What are some of your favorite movies these days?
Oh, these days? Oh, I always find that very hard to answer. Well, recently, you know, I loved Sideways. I love Lost in Translation, but that's not so recent. I can never think of a movie off the top of my head. I think maybe of this year's lot, I probably liked Sideways the most.
Mm-hmm. What do you like about it in particular?
You know what? What I love about it is its bravery. What a brave film. And this is true for so many films that Jim Taylor and Alexander Payne do. They have a protagonist who isn't like, you know, sort of nice man, you know, which in Hollywood, you always have to make the creative character sympathetic. And the way they make their movies, it's so wonderful. He doesn't have to be likable and nice at every point to be sympathetic or for the audience to feel this response. You know, he picks up pornography. He steals from his mother. He's very flawed and he's very lost. You know, he's really experiencing this middle age crisis. So it's such a brave film. And it's such an honest film, and it's funny, and it was done outside, you know,
I can see you liking that film, and, you know, though I see people who said he was so flawed, he was just totally unattractive. I've talked to women who said, why would that nice woman want to be with him, that interesting woman, pick him up?
Well, you could feel that, but still enjoy the movie.
Yes, there's no question about it. Your own screenplays, how difficult is it for you to get screenplays accepted, and what is the process there? And, you know, do you have to go shopping? Is there a hard shopping process? What's that like?
Well, Monks and Wedding was actually the only script that I wrote, which is the first script that I wrote, which was on spec, which means that I had written it on my own time and on my own money. But pretty much by the time I wrote the first draft while I was at school, Meera read it and she wanted to make it. Since then, I've mostly done assignment work, so I haven't done spec work. So there hasn't been so much shopping around in the script, but, you know, I have to, you know, I get set up on meetings with my agents, so I pitch on material. Or I come up with an idea and I pitch the idea.
And is it frustrating if those aren't accepted?
You know, the two things that I pitched last year were both accepted.
Well, that's a good betting average.
Remarkably lucky. But then, you know, you don't really think of so many ideas in a year as, you know, you would like to. but I know one movie I pitched 2 years ago for Killer Films that made Boys Don't Cry and Far From Heaven. So, you know, they wanted me to develop that with them. And then I also sold a half an hour comedy series to HBO, which was also an original idea, which I pitched to them. So,
I'm Matt Rothschild. You're listening to Progressive Radio. I'm speaking with Sabrina Davin, screenwriter of Monsoon Wedding and Cosmopolitan. To what extent do you try to get politics, either sexual politics or other kinds of politics, into screenplays?
You know, I think it's not a conscious effort because, truthfully, I teach screenwriting as well. If I would consciously want a movie to be political, sometimes it gets too polemical. And, you know, the documentary is a better form for that. Or to make a movie, you know, like Move On was making, which are explicitly political, then you're not pretending to be anything else. But I think your politics, no matter what you do, because films are so personal, you know, any form of writing is so personal, that it inevitably reflects your politics, even, you know, journalism, even pure reportage is political to a certain extent. So certainly my politics become part of my work. But I approach them through character, not through the issue. Because if I did that, I mean, you know, it would be hard because then the characters would sound like me instead of sounding like them.
So, to some extent, I think in these days of Bush that there's almost a cultural insurrection going on that the cultural producers, not Hollywood just, but writers and actors are and filmmakers are ahead of the culture in general. Do you believe that?
Are ahead of the culture? Well, yes. I mean, I would believe that. But I think that, I don't know if they're ahead or the conservative movement has gone so far back, the gap has just widened. It might just be that. But I think it is also, you know, and that's a natural process because it has become a smaller world. So, of course, in some ways it's gone further because the world's become more multicultural. There's easier access to other cultures. You know, it's just so great. I mean, Indian culture has become such a much more dominant part of American life than it used to be. But inevitably, with any kind of globalization, there's always a reactive, you know, reaction to that because there's this resistance to the world becoming the older world, you know, breaking down. So I guess that's just a natural process. But yeah, you know, everything between the internet and, you know, information being so cheap and so accessible, if you afford a computer, of course, does that.
Well, I'd like to consider you as part of that resistance, especially with the depictions of sexual roles and stereotypes. I've been speaking with Sabrina Davin, screenwriter of Monsoon Wedding. Thanks for being my guest.
Thank you.
Today's program is available online at progressive.org. You can also write to us at 409 East Main Street, Madison, Wisconsin, 53703. Our music is by Mufa. Progressive Radio is produced by Elizabeth DiNovella and engineered at Audio for the Arts in Madison, Wisconsin.